And we are back, Stripe Show Podcast, on a Thursday. Well, we're filming this earlier in the week, but we're going to post it on a Thursday. By the time you listen to it on all our audio platforms out there, thank you for subscribing and tuning in. And then, of course, on YouTube, you can see us. And there's a benefit to that because we'll be looking at some swings throughout this episode. Thanks for joining us. Last week was great. In studio, Parker McLaughlin. We appreciate everybody tuning into that. Had good feedback on that. It was great having an in-house audience. We have one more of those coming up in March. Dana Dahlquist will join us here on the Sunday before the Players Championship. So we're looking forward to that. But this week, we've got one of the Hall of Famers, World Golf Hall of Fame teachers. Been doing it a long time. Someone I've learned from over my 25 years in the instruction business, and he joins us after a full morning of lessons at his school down at the Biltmore down in Miami, Mr. Jim McClain. Jim, thank you, sir, for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Travis. Thank you.
Now, I know, look, in January we were talking. It was a little chilly up here. I think I told you it was snowing just north of the airport here in Jacksonville, believe it or not. But down in Miami, like, it's not quite that cold, but how cold have you seen it since your time in Miami, which has been how long, Jim? I mean, how long have you been in Miami?
Well, I started at Doral in 1991, if you can believe it. And then I went through 2017 at Doral, where we had the tour event there until it stopped. Now they have LIV coming back, but we had a PGA Tour event all those 25 years I was there. And now I've been at the Biltmore. This was my seventh year at the Biltmore, which is about 20 minutes away, a little closer to Miami.
So has it been at night in the 40s before?
Yeah, we've had some nights in the 40s, a couple nights. Right. You know, people panic if it gets to 50 in here, you know, and in Miami. But yeah, we've had a couple cold evenings, and we had a few days in the 60s. But it's been a really nice winter down here.
You've been doing this a long time. You love to teach. You've impacted so many students and teachers all over the world. You have schools all over the world. I follow you there on Instagram, at McClain Golf. You check out his website, jimmcclain.com. The leader and has been in golf schools, you know, students coming from all over the place. What's your schedule look like these days per week, Jim? I mean, how many hours are you teaching on a weekly basis?
I'm not teaching as much as I did, but I teach quite a bit. I maybe teach 20 hours of private lessons, but I've been doing a lot of these Friday, Saturday, Sunday schools. I do, you know, between 10 and 14 hours out of a 18-hour golf school. So I'm not doing the entire Sunday. I come in a little bit on the Sunday, but I do most of Friday and Saturday of the three-day golf schools. And then there's a couple of schools that I do all three days.
Okay. Yeah, well, I was, you know, when I first got into the teaching business, I'm from the Northwest, and of course you are up in the Seattle area as well. And Carl Welty, who worked with you for many, many years in Seattle, I played golf with Craig. And I think I've told you this before, Craig Welty in college, who was a cross-handed player. And so it was interesting because as a young person in the game, and you mentioned 1991 when you first got to Doral, I graduated high school in 95, played for Lewis and Clark through 99. Craig played at Western Washington, and we were in the same conference. And so I've always followed your career, learned, you know, as a player. But then playing with Craig, it like came full circle. I was like, wow. I'm playing with, you know, Craig Welty, and of course Carl was his uncle, right?
His father.
It was his father. Okay, it was school. Carl was his father. And so it was just we always played in the same group because we both played number one on our team, and he was a cross-handed player, Jim, and he absolutely, you know, crushed it. And I could watch it, and it never bothered me until he got into the bunker, and watching him hit a bunker shot cross-handed just blew my mind. I couldn't watch anymore. I was like, man, that just doesn't even make sense to me at the bunker. He was unbelievable. How good of a player was Carl?
Carl was a good player. He played for San Diego State University, and Carl was just up in Seattle for a few years. He started at Sahali he came up with the Paul Runyon, who was a, you know, the great Paul Runyon. And then he went to Skagit Valley, and that's where Craig is now. He's the head professional at Skagit. And Craig, as you know, was very good. He was a three-time All-American in, I don't know, was that Division II?
It was NAIA, actually. I think Western's NAIA. Moved up now since.
Anyway, he and still is a very good player, but you would never think that his dad was a teacher and let him play cross-handed, but that's the way he liked playing, and he's pretty stubborn, and he wanted to stay that way, and he hit the ball good, so it's one of those things, and we know there have been some terrific cross-handed players through the years, not too many, but Josh Broadway got on the PGA Tour just a few years ago playing cross-handed, and, you know, where there have been some other really good cross-handed players through the years, but and we see Matthew Fitzpatrick chipping and pitching left-handed, I mean cross-handed, so you never know. There's a lot of different ways to play this game. That's unusual, but his dad let him continue to play that way, and he's been very successful.
Vijay Singh now is, he hits everything cross-handed, I think around the greens. Kevin Kisner now chipping cross-handed. I think we're going to see, I had Parker McLaughlin in here last week, and he was talking about how much more he thinks we'll see cross-handed chipping.
I agree. I've converted a few people to cross-handed chipping too, because it really, you know, lowers your left side and gets your left arm more forward, and it's easy to get the handle more forward for a lot of people that flip it a little bit going through. So it's a pretty good, you know, it's a pretty good method around the greens.
It is. Let's get into this. We're going to talk about a lot of different swings. We're going to talk about, I'm really interested, Jim, to get your thoughts just on the overall journey that you've been taking on since 1991, you know, how maybe some of the things that you felt back then, maybe how that language or belief has changed 30 years, 40 years from now, or, and some of the things that have stood the test of time. But I want to start with the winner last week, Rory McIlroy, who I think, Jim, has kind of taken on over the last year some changes in the shape of his swing. He talked about he didn't really like the direction that the shape of his swing was taking on. So I'm going to play this video here. And this is from, I believe, towards the end of last year. And you can see kind of Rory checking his position there at the top. And then, you know, that position right there, very, very different. And for those of us that are not watching right now on YouTube, what we're seeing here, I'm going to play it one more time. This first rehearsal, what you're seeing is his hands are pretty wide away from him. And then that club right there pointing more left. And what he's trying to get out of is his hands maybe a little deeper in that club, a little bit more across the line. So, you know, I think in a nutshell, Jim, it appears wider and a little bit more left. And you go back to, say, 10 years ago when Rory was winning everything, and this video on the right, you can clearly see the club with a mid-iron there pointing more left. The left wrist not as extended as much. The picture on the left, you can see that club certainly a little bit more across the line. So, I don't know. Jim, I watched Rory hit a fade with his driver off of 18, you know, taking it down the left side and fading right. I mean, this is Rory McIlroy, who always liked to see that ball slinging right to left. So there seems to be a little bit of a shift here in the shape of the swing and maybe a few more fades off the tee.
Well, Rory is always, as a young guy and through his career, mostly took the club more out. And it's really dangerous if you take the club out and get it behind you. And then I think he started, as those pictures indicated, kind of sucking his arms in, and then the club was staying out. So you get that angle between your hands and the shaft, and that relates to going across at the top, which I know he just hated. I've watched him many, many times on the range lately working on his swing. And it is interesting. Maybe a little discouraging almost for everybody that, as great a player as he is, he's still working on his golf swing. And the drill I think he did is a real great drill for anybody to do, where you take it halfway back and stop and look at it. And we know Justin Thomas has done that forever. And I know working with Lexi Thompson, we always worked on that halfway back. And then you just coil it from that position. I think that's a great drill for anybody to do. And it also helps you to get the club online. Or, as you said, Rory's actually trying to almost get the club, you know, feeling like it's laid off at the top. So he's not, the goal being not to get it in and across the line. And that's a more of a hook kind of swing.
a player like Rory, like this big explosive, I mean, 190 ball speed, the drive that he hit on, what was it, 14, the par five?
Crazy.
Silly. It's just silly. I mean, how uphill that is. I mean, he's going driver seven iron to the middle of the green, makes eagle on Sunday. Hard to comprehend. I mean, there's Shane Lowry hitting, you know, chasing a, I think it was a three iron up the hill, you know, down to the front of the green, and Rory's bringing a seven iron, towering. But yeah, it really does seem like a shift back to maybe getting it pointing a little bit more left. What's interesting, Jim, is I was texting someone at Golf Channel last year, and Rory kind of kept getting it a little underneath. I mean, you see that a lot with better players. They kind of get it a little underneath, trapped behind them. They tend to hang back a little bit, and then that face has to flip over, and they get too much of that push hook kind of dispersion. And I texted him and I said, why doesn't he just go back to this picture on the right? Why doesn't he just, you know, point it more over there? And he says, well, Rory doesn't think he could physically get it there. It's like, what? Like, physically get it there? Rory McIlroy, this guy's, you know, a specimen on the golf course. But anyway, nonetheless, it sure looks like he's trying to get it there as well. And that's a good position, Jim. Do you feel like when you have a better player who gets under, generally, you know, don't get it across, because that across can help facilitate that spine hanging back a little bit?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. The more you go across the line, the more you're going to want to go underneath it. And mm-hmm. that's definitely what good players do when they make a mistake. They drop more underneath. The club gets a little too much from the inside. And then, like you mm-hmm. said, you've got to use a little more hand action to go to square it up. And, you know, then you hit one to the right and it hangs out. And then the next one, you hit a hook to the left, and then now you missed one to the right and one to the left. You get a lot of little doubt in your mind, and it's a very tough way to play golf. Now, Rory's been able to hit that draw most of his life and obviously be great. I mean, I was around, of course, watching him when he was winning the four majors that he's won and mm-hmm. almost winning the Masters a few times. And he's been a fabulous talent, and his power is just incredible. It's so much fun to watch him play, and it's pretty easy to, you know, the swing doesn't look that hard. It's a fluid looking golf swing. I think it's probably, you know, my favorite golf swing. And I think a lot of people would say that, of course, but yeah, I think when he gets the club a little more online at the top, it's just going to help him to not drop that club underneath. And I think that's always been the thing that he's had to fight is, you know, he's had that great power as a young boy. And as juniors, they tend to get the club more underneath it. And it's not too bad until you start getting, you know, big speed into your swing. And then that can be dangerous.
Is there a feel that you like to go to for the body where, let's say the club is now good, where you would teach the player to, let's say, cover it more, right? Which for all intents and purposes is not backing up. It's to get a little more on top of it and rotate left. Yeah. Is there a feel that you would go to and share with that?
Yeah. Well, I think the move from the top, of course, while the arms are still going back, you're going to get that move over to the lead leg, and the left knee is going to move. You're going to get a different feel. So many people can kick the right knee out past the golf ball. I think that's a good feeling. But yes, the center is going to be moving forward. Now you get right side bend, so you tend to think that people are leaning back, but really they're rotating and mm-hmm. turning through the golf ball with right side bend. And that gives you the look like, yeah, they're underneath it and behind it, but it's a big difference from actually getting your spine tilted too far and having that right shoulder just drop straight downward instead of down and out and forward. And mm-hmm. that should, you know, move together. So you keep your rotation going through the golf shot. As soon as you stop the body and let the club gain on your body, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of high handicaps that come over the top and, you know, that they would love to.
Oh, yes. Mostly that's what we're teaching, the inside out swings.
They would love to feel stuck for the first time, I think.
Absolutely.
For a lot. All right, I'm going to play this video, okay? We're going to keep the body going here. This is a video I pulled from your from Instagram at McLean Golf. And it's a great video from years ago. Let's listen to this.
You know, most people have been taught or think that there are two turns in the golf swing. They look at the shoulder turn and the hip turn. But really, there are four turns in the golf swing. And I'm going to do those from the ground up. First, we have the knees. Then we have the hips. Then we have the shoulders. And finally, we have the head that also turns and moves to the right in the backswing. Now let's take a look at the four turns using graphics. Watch the backswing and notice how the four turns line up at the top. The knees have turned approximately one half of the hips, while the shoulders have approximately doubled the hip turn. The head shifts and rotates slightly to the right. If you take out any of those four turns, you restrict the potential of your body.
So it's amazing how often in this studio that I am talking about one of those four, if not multiple, over and over again with amateur players that walk through here. And I say that because, you know, there is a lot of discussion about, well, the backswing doesn't matter. The only thing that the ball knows is impact. And that's true. The ball just knows impact. But the backswing in what you just discussed right there has a lot of value for so many people listening to this podcast right now. When you teach those four, what kind of order do you put it in, or is there an order, or do you just react to what you're looking at, to what that student brings to the table?
Well, I think you react to this student because some people over-rotate. In fact, a lot of amateurs have too much turn in the backswing. They've got a lot of activity in the backswing and not enough time to get back. So they don't have any power in their golf swing. Mm-hmm. There's some resistance in the lower body, but that doesn't mean that your knees don't move. And the turn in the knee is not really a turn, but it's a line across your knees that shows that you get extension of your right knee and it moves off the line, moves away. But I like to have the person retain knee flex in the backswing, not to lock the right knee. So that would be somebody that overturns the knees on the backswing, and then that leads to turning the hips too much. Sort of turning your hips and your shoulders together. Mm-hmm. You want your shoulders to far out, turn your hips. And that was the X factor, the differential between mm-hmm. your shoulders and the hips. We didn't mention the X factor, but that's what that DVD yep. was from, the original X factor.
Yes.
Actually a VHS tip 100 years ago. But also the fact that the head rotates or turns and moves to the right on a driver swing. And of course, I'm talking about a full driver swing in that mm-hmm. clip right there, not a short iron. But, you know, it used to be the golf swing was taught with more hands and arms. And a lot of times either a rock steady head or no head movement was a big thing. And we still see that at my golf schools. People come in and have trying to keep their head, you know, from moving at all. And that causes tension in your neck and your shoulders and usually a reverse pivot, and no power in the swing. So these things combine to get you loaded and wound up in the backswing coil. And as you said, yeah, the backswing is very important, tremendously yeah. important to build power. And I thought that focusing on what is the body doing in the swing, because it affects where the golf club goes tremendously. So yeah, getting that club loaded up, getting your body behind the golf ball with a driver. And there was a nice symmetry between the angle and the knees, like 25 degrees, and the hips 50 degrees, and the shoulders 100 degrees. Mm-hmm. So that it was a kind of a nice little symmetry in a model power golf swing.
I think there was like a misperception to that too at first. And correct me if I'm wrong. It was like you want to turn your upper, but not your lower. And it's like, no. I don't think that's what it is. I think you're still turning your lower some. Like you're like you said, your hips are turning 45, 50 degrees. It's okay to have your right knee lose a little flexion. We're not going to hyperextend it, but it's okay for the knee to lose a little flexion. It's okay for the right hip to climb a little bit and the hips to turn and help facilitate that shoulder turn, right? Did you run into that where the misperception was turn the upper, not the lower?
I actually did because I talked about resisting the lower body on the backswing and exploding going through. I still absolutely still believe that, but that didn't mean not turning your hips. I actually had the model swing in the X Factor with more turns, 60 degrees of hip turn and 100 degrees or more with the shoulder turn. But the hips turning, I had a corridor between 40 and 65 degrees. It's just that I knew that a tour player turned their shoulders more than 90 degrees. And we know now with biomechanics, which we did, I didn't have when I did that. This work was all done with video. And just, I think a very good estimation of how much the shoulders were rotating and how much the hips were rotating. But certainly, we saw most of the tour players could rotate their shoulders over 90 degrees. Not all of them, though. And then the movement forward was so much more explosive going forward. The amount of lateral motion and rotary motion in the swing was a very very apparent. And you just can't do that if you get too much movement behind it and too much leg action. You don't have time. You have 4/5 of a second on your backswing and 1/5 of a second on the downswing. So those mistakes that you made on the backswing, you can't correct them in that shorter period of time.
It is kind of like a it is kind of funny how it works that, you know, with you, when you start from the knees and then up to the hips and then the shoulders and then the head, like there is kind of this almost a bit of this kind of feeling of turning and spiraling a little up.
Right.
It's
No
like this
doubt.
kind of this almost like this, like I use the word elongation, like you're like I'm pulling the rubber band up, you know, and like I mean turning it. It's amazing everything that we just watched in that video and you're saying and turning like that, and then feeling the player feels like they're kind of working just up a little bit, just how good that can look for an amateur player. Because their
Yeah.
perception is staying down, right, Jim? Their perception, I got to stay down.
Exactly. You know that they get trapped down, and it's more just lifting the arms and the golf club up in the backswing, which we see with a lot of players. The left, you lose the arm structure. You don't have enough width in the swing. You can't keep the left arm straight when you don't support it with the body going back and create some speed also in the backswing. Of course, we know that the amateur golfer takes the club back so much slower than a PGA Tour player or any good player. It's they just don't create any speed here in their backswing to get that nice arm structure. And like you said, that rubber band going up and creating some nice width in the backswing where you can use gravity and let the club fall, like you see all of these great tour players.
I'm going to play a swing here from a guy that I think is very relevant in today's game. This is Victor Hovland, who I just, you know, I love watching this guy hit a golf ball as well. And you know, you watch Victor, and I've got his swing playing here up on the screen. And this is a guy that is, I think, in many ways, kind of the poster child of, let's call it, shallowing the shaft out, Jim. The shaft moving towards horizontal in transition, a flexed lead wrist or bowed. Was shallowing out, flexing the lead wrist, was that something discussed back in the 90s when you took over Doral and you really started getting into the business and you're working with the best players? And like, was that something that would come across your radar then, maybe as much as you would see and hear it now?
I don't think as much as now, but I wrote in the X Factor in the 8-Step Swing book how the club goes more vertical and shallows. We didn't necessarily use all the words, but I think we did use that word. I mean, it's a really almost a fundamental of all tour players that the club is more up on the backswing and down on the downswing. Now, when we started talking about this left wrist, I lived with Bruce Litsky in school and Bill Rogers. They were both big bow players and, of course, great players. Bill got to be number one in the world, and Litsky was a ball striking machine. And I wish I had been a little bit smarter to realize what they were doing. They both kind of hooded that club going back, had the toe down going back in the backswing. And now we've learned a lot more in modern instruction. in putting that club in a stronger position going back. And of course, Hovland's got in a very strong position in the backswing, and then really, really lowers it down, really shallows it, and then has a tremendous amount of right side bend and rotation going through. And when he was on, I thought he was the best player in the world almost about a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. And
Victor, yeah.
Just, mm-hmm. Yeah, just a yeah. just a ball striking machine and, yeah. and just hitting that rocket fade. He looked a lot like David Duval in the old days, who again, who got to be number one in the world. I think Victor got to number two in the world. And then I know you're going to bring yeah. this up about all these changes he's making. And, I'll let you go ahead with those questions because we talked about this briefly before we started.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like before I get to his press conference this week, it's interesting. Like all these players were mentioning this flexed lead wrist. Dustin Johnson would be another one. I think John Rahm certainly can get it there. You know, they all faded. Right. I mean, most of these guys that get that face in that strong position flex, they all rotate and hit these little fades.
Correct.
And you can even argue now back to Rory just for a second, like with that club pointing a little bit more over to the left, like his left wrist is not as extended. His left wrist is certainly, it's not flex, it's not bowed, but it's more that way. Right. So Litsky always fade. I mean, he never hit a draw, right? Never hit a draw.
He couldn't hit a foot draw. But the more your wrist is flexed when you come in, that leaves the face open. And as soon as you let your wrist go back this way, it closes the club face. But it doesn't compute too easily for us, because we think that's going to be a hook move. But as you bring that club down, it actually keeps the face back a little bit. And Victor is one of the guys that really holds mm-hmm. it off quite a bit going through and just hits the ball with tremendous rotation of his body. I just thought it was just amazing to watch him play. And then now we hear, I mean, I know you're going to do this press conference, so I'll let that go because I'll let that go.
Yeah. He's a very curious person and just over the last couple years, I think we're up to 8 or 9 now instructors since turning pro. And so I always, when I hear a player talk like this and go down this path and jump around with teachers, it makes me concerned. I'm not necessarily critiquing it other than just concerned for a great player like Victor that perhaps maybe he's complicating it too much. He's overthinking it. And so here's Victor, from this last week, at Pebble.
It's not very good. And, it's been frustrating. I do feel like I'm making headway and I'm constantly trying to put the piece of the puzzle together. And even if I'm not seeing results from day to day, which is extremely frustrating, I do feel like I'm learning more. And even if kind of that domino doesn't start to fall today or tomorrow or the next day, I'm hoping the cumulative effect of that knowledge and experience, eventually I'll get over that hump and we'll turn things around. So
he kind of continues on that path and, this is a guy that's been thinking through a lot of different things, has played at a high level. We're talking in college, we're talking US Am champ. We're talking a guy coming out and winning on the PGA Tour. In my mind, one of the best ball strikers in the world. To your point, he got up to number 2, I think it was number 3 in the world. And you listen to him talk and it sounds like he can't get the ball airborne, And so I just worry with a player like that when they're jumping around a little bit, like, is this getting too complicating and too technical to where, a guy loses their game and all of a sudden they're not even a shadow of what they used to be.
Absolutely, Travis. To me as a teacher, I would look at the upside and the downside. And when you get to number 3 in the world, there's not much upside right there. And do you really need to make swing changes to get to number 2 or number 1? And when you when you're working on your swing, you're not working on the other things. But I would say that this is a guy that wakes up in the morning thinking about his golf swing and goes to bed at night thinking about his golf swing. He's all in on golf. And he's maniacal. The opposite of Litsky or some of the guys that have a don't practice hardly at all, and kind of have a swing that is low maintenance. He is super high maintenance, and I think he likes it like that.
Yeah,
but it is a bit dangerous, and sometimes it's you can't get back to as good as you were. You can't quite get back to those same exact feelings that you had when you were just absolutely roping this golf ball with the driver and just hitting it super long and, you know, pretty much hitting it every fairway.
Yeah. And he's worked with terrific teachers, all of them, you know, through this journey. And we're talking Jeff Smiths of the world and, you know, Grant Wade and Joe Mayo. And I think he's working with TJ Yeaton now, you know, like some really polished teachers. So it's, these are people that can help and move the things along. Smart people that are looking at data. My concern,
but they all have an idea, you know.
They all have an idea.
And when you ask the teacher a question, they're going to answer it, and that's a little bit dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And so my concern is, they all have an idea, and then you get different thoughts, and so for Victor, my concern is, man, are you asking for too many ideas? And are you overthinking this and kind of moving away from, you know, one of my favorite terms for professional golfers is their genius, right? The genius that they are and that's within. Is that eroding to some degree? I hope not. He's still a young man. I hope that when I do listen to him talk, Jim, I do think he realizes that maybe I'm tinkering too much and I need to settle the ship down a little bit and I need to just, you know, get on track and go for it. And so I hope that's the case.
Yeah. I think some guys like that, you know, I'm close, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
And they like that feeling of I'm a little bit off, but I'm on the right path thinking.
I don't know if your family's ever, so we're guilty of this too, because you've got multiple facilities all over the world. Like, how many academies do you have now, Jim?
Seven.
You have seven, right? So they're, and all over the world. You have one in Korea.
Excuse me?
You have one in Korea, right?
I do. I was in Seoul last year. We have one in Madrid, one in Mexico, and then, four of them here in America.
So I'm about ready to open my second one up here, downtown Jacksonville, indoor studio. And it's kind of like my wife will look at me and, you know, this studio is doing great. We've had it for a year and a half. And she's always like, okay, now you're going to take on more, right? A second one. And then it's like, oh yeah, there's a partnership here. Now we're going to take on this, right? And the point there is it going to take you away from what you're good at over here, right? Can you get too many things going? Have you ever had that conversation where it's like, oh really? Well, now we're going to open up another one. It's always the next one. It's always the next one, right?
Yeah.
And so we're guilty of it too, in where we'll take on more when what we've got going at that point in time has been up to that point very successful. So Victor's not alone. Hey, we're guilty too.
True.
You never had that conversation at home? Like, hey, now we're opening another one? They're like, nah, just open up.
that's true. It gets more complicated. For me, I think when we had Doral for quite a few years, we had a lot of teachers. I was able to move my teachers that had worked for me for a long time into those new places.
Yeah.
And that's worked pretty good. But it does make your life a little more complicated. I think I'm a Norwegian also, like Victor. I like having some balls in the air.
Well, being curious as an instructor is not a bad thing, because it has changed. There's no doubt over time, and it'll continue to change. You know, sometimes I think back to when I first started, like, I can't even believe I was saying that. And you know, versus what I'm doing now, but you live and learn, right? You just continue to learn, because you've got another book coming out. I mean, you're always making tweaks. You're X Factor. You're always making tweaks to make it better. And part of that's from what you've learned from the ground, right? And what you've been doing on the force plate. I mean, real quick, I mean, I know there's a lot to the force plate, and I know there's a lot to pressure versus weight and all that. But if you had to pinpoint a couple things that maybe that were kind of aha moments for you when you started getting into that data?
Yeah, I had force plates, but they weren't great force plates. It was just a flat piece at Doral, and it wasn't quick enough to be great. I put a lot of tour players on there, but now we've got Smart to Move, which is dual force plates, and we get some really great information. The only thing is, I mean, I was at the golf show. I know you were there, and the evening we have there, that Chris Como was kind of involved with running. They had Smart to Move, and they had some guys talking about the different data that they're getting now. When they're getting more tour players on, they're seeing more randomness. So it's not. I think at first we were thinking, okay, you got to get peak vertical force at this time, and you got to have this much lateral force and this much rotational force. But then when you start getting some different people on there, you're saying, well, wait a minute, which we see, to me, like in video, that you're seeing parameters, I call them safety zones, that, you know, it's not one way for everybody. We have windows that we need to hit. And that's where I think it's really cool to use the Smart to Move for us. You know, we've had it a couple of years. I'm definitely not an expert. I've got a couple guys that are much better at the Biltmore than me. Mm-hmm. We also have it at my school at Miami Beach. So it's been very interesting. And, you know, the kids love it. The younger generation loves to see the data. Mm-hmm. And just about everybody likes to see the numbers up there. We're just getting into the numbers with force plate data. Mm-hmm. And making sure that we can understand it, because there's a lot of things up there on that screen, the direction of force and when it's moving, and you know how big the bubble is, and so you have to try and simplify it for most people. That's for sure.
And there's different patterns, no different than the different components in the golf swing. And now, speaking of difference, I want to transition to this. This is a short game shot. Jordan Spieth, I'm showing, you know, grew up in Texas, get that shaft forward. Look at the head as he takes it back. His head will go forward in the backswing. He's going to lean that handle forward and turn through. I mean, that leading edge is getting on the ground, and he's hitting down on it, and he's getting it out of the ground, right? But it's definitely got, let's say, more shaft lean than this. And this is a similar shot. I mean, we're not going to match these up perfectly, but this is Max Homa. Very different shaft angle. You can see, you know, very neutral. If I take it back, you can see very wide club head, just barely above the hands. You know, Spieth going to definitely take on more wrist hinge, more vertical going back. And then, not a lot of shaft lean coming through. The club head's coming in, just kind of brushing it. So we know both can work. And I had, I had Parker in here last week, and Parker, I think, definitely is a little more on the shallow side, but but obviously teaches the steep components when needed. And then, you know, you've got Joe Mayo, who's, you know, very much on getting steeper on it, the vertical swing plane and those things. And certainly that's a technique as well. But I think, one of the points I got brought up last week, Jim, in our in-studio series was, if you had to take a stock shot for an amateur golfer, you know, a 15 handicap comes in here, just kind of all over the place. And you had to kind of say, all right, let me just show you a stock greenside shot that we're going to hit it up there, medium trajectory, a little bit of spin. For me, I think I'm going to have a little shaft lean. I'm going to have a little wrist hinge where that club head's a little bit above, but I'm going to create an environment where that club head's going to hit down and that leading edge probably isn't going to dig, and they're going to turn through, right? I'm probably going to err a little shallow versus steep. Stock shot, amateur player, understanding that we can add steep components too when needed. That's where I fall. Where would you go with that?
Yeah, we're putting so many people through our golf schools, and a ton of teaching as well. So I find this tremendously interesting, these very different ways of teaching pitching. Now, the common denominators are head stays forward or moves a little forward, moves up, and you have rotation. So those things, I think, staying more forward at address, those things are common denominators. Now, when we start talking about, releasing it earlier, going opposite kinematic sequence, or getting the club more in front of you when you go through versus leaning it like Jordan does. Well, Jordan grew up in Texas, like you said, and Homa's out in California, and a different kind of grass. for me, with the average player, I'm trying to get them to match up more of shaft forward, a little more shaft lean, and a flat left wrist. So it gets into their whole golf swing, because I'm a big building block teacher. So I'm trying to start small, building this into their full swing. When I get to a tour player or a low handicap player, I might go more shallow then, depending on, you know, how they're striking the ground. But there are some really good tour players that are very shallow going through. And then Jordan Spieth, of course, pitches the ball as good as anybody on the planet. So you just can't say that that's wrong. And there are other great pitchers and chippers that I see that are also steep on the bottom. Of course, Joe Mayo's talking more steep and then getting the club, you know, getting the handle up as he goes through. So he's not saying crashing into the ground. But I do like to see the average 15 handicapper learn to not flip it and not get the club in front of their hands going through. So I would favor more flat left wrist, shallow forward, and a little divot after the ball.
When you, because I know the building blocks that you talk about, and one of the shots, the term that it will come through here once in a while is a hinge and hold. You've probably heard of that term, a hinge and hold, where it's like, where we hinge the wrist and then we hold it and we turn through.
Mickelson.
You like that?
Yeah.
You like that concept?
Okay. I think, you know, I listened to Tiger a lot, as much as I possibly could at Doral, and he would talk about that with chipping, as putting a little hinge on it and then turning the chest through as it went through with his small pitch shots. And Phil chipped like that. But that's more like old school pitching, really. But I think for the average player to get that feeling, I think I like that club trailing behind the hands forward, because I'd like to get that into their whole game.
Yeah. And when that happens for the first time for an amateur, that's a big deal, right? That's a big deal. I do think for both of them. So you go shallow and steep. They both want shaft lean, right? So it's not that, you know, I think the steeper in general wants more, you know, and certainly the wider with less hinge versus the more vertical hinge that we see. And look, there's different, you know, there's different times for different shots. I get that. But just as a baseline of building a shot, like that shaft forward more, you know, head more forward, steeper going back, suggesting more shaft lean. You know, those players can get that handle working back up out of the ground where that, you know, that handle's forward, and then they're able to, you know, shallow it out through the body.
You got to make sure that you're not pulling the handle down as you come into impact, and then you're going to hit the chunk behind it. So that's the dangerous part. And that's what better players that are really bad chippers and pitchers, that's what they do. And because they've done this their whole life with hands forward. And now when we have golf is in the last 20 years, and it's gotten more this way, the green side areas are so tight. I mean, you've got to make great contact. And that's why, you know, we're teaching a lot of people to hit a hybrid around the greens or putt from off the greens instead of trying to pitch it and chip it. Like maybe we saw at Pinehurst, there's a lot of putting from off the green or hybrids, which I think is much safer, of course, for most people.
If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figured out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf Putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com. All right, so we're going to play a little game here. So we're going to go back to 80s and 90s versus today's modern game. All right, so I'm going to put a statement out there, and you're going to tell me that you were more likely to see this back in the 80s and 90s or today's modern. All right.
Okay.
So this is amateurs. So this is, forget about tour players. This is, they're coming into your golf school. Oh, there's another one of those patterns. Right. All right. Okay. So number one, club face angle in the golf swing, open going back, and then have to shut it coming through. Did you see more open faces in the golf swing, 80s and 90s, or today's modern game?
80s and 90s, for sure.
It's interesting. Why do you think less today? Just more educated about it?
Oh, well, I think a lot of great players talked about, Jack Nicklaus talked about open to close. There, a lot of people tried to get the toe up on the backswing. Was that's kind of the way I was taught, for sure. Yeah. And now we know that the club face should be more parallel to your spine tilt. So, yeah, this is opening the face. And then a lot of people wanted the toe down at the top of the backswing. And that's, you know, now I think we're much more close to a flat left wrist, or some people even teaching a bowed left wrist at the top of the backswing. And doing that early in the backswing is good.
All right, 80s or 90s versus today's modern game. Inside takeaway. Club head gets behind the hands early, right away.
80s and 90s, for sure.
Okay. I think it's pretty, okay. What, so 80s and 90s club head. It's because I started teaching a bunch more again the last 2 years. I feel like I see the inside takeaway 70% of the time, new student.
Oh, I think we still see it all the time. Yeah. I don't mean we're not seeing it.
Yeah, right. But No. That wasn't the point.
I think it was like low and slow and into the inside was more taught in the, you know, early years of, you know, you can go back to 100 years, was more of the old Scottish roundhouse swing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're probably right. The inside takeaway. And oftentimes that goes with the open face. Not always. We still see lot of inside takeaways where the face is shut. It's interesting. You know, you have to, there's patterns and no one trains teachers better than you do. And I'm sure you're talking about in your Monday meetings when you go through common swing flaws. And as a teacher, it's like, you have to get very proficient at fixing these patterns, right? You have to be able to fix these patterns. If you can't, then you're not going to be successful as a teacher.
And fix them in an order, you know, first things mm-hmm. first, don't fix something later on that was caused, you know, it's set up or from your grip or your takeaway. So yeah, absolutely.
All right. Here's a tough one. 80s, 90s versus today. Short game shots. Stance more open to the left versus square.
I would say that would be 80s and 90s more open.
More open. For me as a teacher, I feel like I'm not as open to the masses short game. I'm okay with them being more square. I feel mm-hmm. like that's, I don't know if that's right or wrong. That's just the way I feel. How do you feel?
No, I think that's fine. I think getting open can be dangerous as far as, you know, their swing path and what they're doing. So I think square is fine for chipping. I like a little bit open. You can see a little bit better, and it gives you that feeling of being a little more solid for the average player going through, but definitely not too open.
Not too open, yeah. It was interesting. Parker showed a lot of footage on the more square stance, and, mm-hmm. and especially out of a bunker, more square. Putting. Backswing to follow through ratio. More. Longer back, shorter through. More 80s, 90s, or today?
Today, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you saw great putters do that. I mean, Ben Crenshaw is one of the greatest putters in the history of golf, and he had that longer backswing and short finish. I played just a lot brilliant. With Ben, so I saw that a lot, and worked a lot with Tom Kite, too, and they were taught by Harvey Pinnock, and that was more a longer backswing and a hold finish. We're seeing that a lot more now. I think watching Cameron Smith, who's such a brilliant putter, he's got that much longer back, slower coming into the ball. And yeah. I think definitely in the old days was short back and accelerate the putter through, which we know now is not the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the change, you know, in that, which, as a result, less acceleration, you know, more kind of this cruise control per se. through the strike. All right, let's, I know you got to go. Let's finish up with some juniors. I want to play this video. This is a video that you posted at the end of last year, maybe. And this is a student who has now grown up, and I'll let you tell the story, but let's play it first. For those that are just listening, this is a young girl, probably 7'8", seven balls teed up, and she just firing away without pausing. And I don't think missed a shot. I honestly don't think she missed a shot, back and forth, right down the line, 7, 8 in a row. Who was that young lady?
Well, yeah, that was Emily. She was, I think, 9 when she did that. And that's a drill I've used forever. It's a machine gun drill back and through. And she, of course, she executed it so beautifully. You see the flow that she had in her swing, that nice rocking movement on the takeaway. She's now going to be a freshman at Yale, following her sister, the Lee family, that I've taught them for a long time. She was just down a couple weeks ago. And yeah, great girl. And she's a very, one of the top juniors in the metropolitan area in New York.
I'm going to play it one more time because her brother is in the backdrop there. And I'm pretty sure, is he a player at Penn?
He's at Penn. Yep. He's playing on the golf team at Penn. Stephen Lee. Steve Lee. Yep.
Wow.
We're also a very good player.
So let's finish the podcast with this, Jim, if you wouldn't mind, because you've trained so many. You've taught a lot of tour players, and you've had that success. But you've also, you're, I think, an expert in taking junior golfers and teaching them all the way up to play in college, to get to the professional ranks, if that's their goal. Like, you have seen that journey perhaps more than anyone. Could you just share with my audience, because we have a lot of teachers, we have a lot of parents, just some of the things that you've learned over the years, and maybe some of the do's and don'ts, you know, of training a young player who loves the game and wants to go places with it.
Yeah, well, it's getting juniors to try to motivate them and to have fun with them. But sometimes you get a junior that really wants to excel, that will do the extra work. And of course, it takes a lot of lonely time or time alone that some kids are able to do and other kids won't do it. But I think the motivating the kids and telling them, you know, what their future might be and helping them with their dream has been fun. You know, I've loved working with juniors. Mm-hmm. I had some great young kids in New York. I was a head professional at some nice places in New York and also then started at Westchester Country Club as a teacher. But I had some really good kids there. Then that led me into teaching the club pros up in New York and then the tour players. So it's always, you know, a lot of young teachers want to go right to teaching a tour player to be a top teacher in the country. But it takes time. It's a progression. And I think if you don't like teaching juniors, you're probably not going to be a great teacher. I think you learn a lot from kids by being around them. And then I had some really nice, good kids down here in Florida. So that was, I'm just lucky to be around some kids that really wanted to do it. Christy Kerr became, you know, a number one junior, and Lexi Thompson, Eric Compton, and James Vargas, and so and Lucy Lee down here that I worked with and right down here. And then some other kids that would come down and work with me. Webb Simpson, I worked a lot with Webb when he was a junior. And Liz Jan Angelo, I played at Duke and played on the tour. But, you know, it's just, you get a little bit lucky having the right kids that want to do it. But then the inspiration part is part of being a teacher, the motivation. But I've always considered myself a teacher, there's coaching, but then I think teaching them good things at the beginning sets them on a nice path for going later.
Yeah, I think it's well said. And you mentioned, you know, the people that you just mentioned, the Lexi Thompsons of the world, you know, obviously Eric Compton's, they played professionally, but there's so many others that are now doing something in their other profession, but they know how to play golf, you know, and they know how to play at a high level. And it's been fun, my 24 years of teaching, to see some of these students walk back through here And they're like, hey, you know, I'm working at so-and-so, you know, in the financial industry and this and that, but man, you know, my golf game, you know, it's, what are you playing? I'm a one handicap or something. You know, it's like, man, you got that for the rest of your life. And so it's fun to start the journey. I've got some young kids again that are coming in here and they have aspirations. They're getting better. They're starting to get into tournaments and this and that. Some kids that are now starting to play in college, but whether they continue on in college or they make it that 0.01%, like you said, teaching them something now and teaching them the game of golf now, they can take that with them for the rest of their life. And that's pretty cool.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You know, you have these years of imitative skills when you're young. So if you can build a good swing and good habits when you're young, you're going to have a good swing for the rest of your life. And that's a very big gift that we're able to do as teachers.
Yeah. Jim McClain, I can't thank you enough for your time, everything you've done for our industry. I've learned a great deal from you. You know, a couple Northwest guys just, you know, shooting the golf talk here after all these years. So we'll do it again, hopefully here soon. Go to his website, jimmcclain.com, Instagram at McClain Golf, number one in schools at Biltmore. And your new book is coming out right here soon this summer.
No, it's up there in New York, but it takes a long time, Travis, for a book to get done. They're saying at the end of this year, maybe the beginning of 2026. That's what they tell me.
All right. Well, we'll look for it in 2026. Jim, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Travis.